Welcome back, everybody, to the 23rd inaugural episode of What Else Sucks, the 10th inaugural episode of 2017, and the second inaugural episode focusing on Better Call Saul. I'm Scott. I'm here with Jason tonight. What's going on, Jason?
What's going on?
We're going to talk about two episodes of Better Call Saul. We missed last week due to a variety of reasons.
But, inclement weather.
Yeah, more or less. And just like, I don't know, when it's raining like that for just like what feels like a week, I don't know. It's hard to.
Yeah. Once it rains, the last thing I would do is sit inside and get on the computer. I just want to rather just watch TV or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. But, you know, one of the big things I picked up out of last week's episode of Better Call Saul, we'll just get right into it so we can cover 2 weeks here. I loved Kim's give me a dollar moment with Jimmy. I thought that was a really great callback and also just a really good scene, because when Saul Goodman pulls the give me a dollar thing with Walt and Jesse, it's the first time you really get the full Saul Goodman treatment of like just how fast talking and what's the word I'm looking for here? Not manipulative, but like you start getting the sense that like that's who this guy is. Like he can just like talk his way out of situations, and it's really fun to see that the birth of that was kind of rooted in Kim Wexler, because I mean that's one of my favorite Saul moments in general, and that also kind of leads into, at the time I felt like it was going to be more of a chess match between Kim and Chuck and Howard, because I feel like the board was getting set up that way, and I guess we'll kind of elaborate a little bit more on where that's going in a minute, but that's not as much where it went. I kind of hope it still does go there as things progress, but I think more importantly, like the past two episodes, we've seen a lot of dynamic changes with Jimmy and Kim's relationship.
In what ways?
I think the last two episodes, you really see that Kim is devoted to Jimmy more than she should be. And I mean, that's kind of been apparent for, you know, a season of this show.
I agree. And I think she knows that as well. You can see it sometimes on her face.
Yeah. And I mean, to bring it up to this week's episode, at the end of the episode, Jimmy's like, you know, you don't need to be doing this. Why are you sticking your neck out for me like this? And she's like, well, let's just call it the fallacy of sunk costs. And so, I mean, it gives you a sense of her feeling like she's already kind of come so far with this guy that she needs to try and see it through. But I don't know, their chemistry is great. So, I mean, I'm going to root for as much of them as I can get before it inevitably goes sour somewhere. I was thinking about that when I was rewatching this week's episode, is just how like heartbreaking it's going to be when whatever rift between them finally does crop up hardcore.
A show like this too, where it's a lot of callbacks, and you bring back old characters from a different show, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of nostalgia too. You can't say enough how good Rhea Seehorn is as Kim Wexler. She is, it's a star every time she's on the screen as Kim. She's phenomenal.
And this week, I'll I feel like we should just start doing a montage of the week on this show, because I mean, there's so many good ones. And this one, her getting ready routine was fantastic. Yeah. Like getting up, getting the coffee ready, going across to the gym. I mean, you all, especially her montages, you just get the sense of how much hustle she has and how dedicated and organized she is when she's trying to get something done.
You're not going to outwork Kim Wexler.
Oh, yeah. That's out of the question.
Yep, out of the question.
And one of the arcs that kind of blended between last week and this week is just the general cat and mouse between Mike and Gus, which was super fun to watch last week, especially when we start getting the Los Pollos Hermanos stuff, and like the shots introducing Los Pollos Hermanos were really good. And then also, you pointed this out, just like how good the shots are when they're entering the restaurant for the first time and they've still got Mike's voiceover talking with Jimmy outside while Jimmy's walking in and looking around. That sequence
was really good. First of all, big shout out to Gus and Giancarlo Espinillo, whose birthday is today. We're recording his birthday. So
happy birthday indeed.
Yeah, big shout out to him. There's two. Well, like, you always, it's like they just kind of worry. You're playing too much of nostalgia. You bring too many old characters back. How does it work? But man, when Gus shows up on screen and you get episode 3, he does Gus things. You're like, yeah, this is all worth it. Let's have more of this, please.
And that was actually going to be my next question is like, I feel like it totally, it makes sense in the arc of this to bring Gus back, but do you feel like it was overly fan serving to bring him back in the way that they did?
And doing the restaurant is very similar to how you did with Walt. You meet him there in the restaurant. You see him clean cut at first.
Sure.
But at some point, you had to connect the dots with either him, Mike, and Jimmy. At some point, you connect all those dots.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'll go ahead.
And so I think you had to be in a certain way. And I think they probably did the best they could with Mike's investigation for Hector Salamanca and all of that that's going on with Mike. And so you need to find a way to, because you're going to set up down the line, like Mike being a trusted cohort of Gus's, and the same thing for Saul Goodman. And so that was that backstory with the two of them. It's like, the more you see them interact, the more you're like, okay, I get why he's loyal to Gus and breaking bad. So I think they need to have time to establish that relationship and let that grow.
Yeah. And I mean, I like that they got right to it. Like, they didn't try and dick around and like tease Gus coming in for like 3 or 4 weeks or something. Like, they got right to it, because I mean, even though they've got plenty of time with this show, like, I don't think you need to be screwing around just like kind of dropping hints on something like that. Cause like you say, I mean, you've got kind of a lot of narrative and backstory to build to get where I feel like this story is going. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Yep.
So, I mean, I felt like it was done. I think what might be bothering me more than anything is kind of the extracurricular stuff involving Gus, is like some of the Twitter posts and stuff felt maybe a little pandering. But I mean, I have a hard time critiquing anything this show does, to be honest with you. So, I mean,
pandering just because, like, people have that short attention span, they're not going to watch stuff live all the time. So, sure. Like, maybe somebody who hadn't watched yet, you know, they didn't always seem Breaking Bad. And they see, oh, Gus is in this one. Let me check it out and see what Gus is doing. Like,
right.
I mean, I get, from a social media point of view, I get why they would do that.
And then also when they're in Los Pollos Hermanos, we get another just great example of how compelling this show makes some of the sequences with no dialogue. When you've got Jimmy like scoping out the restaurant, waiting for this guy to show up, and he's just doing, trying to be low key and doing restaurant things. But I mean, there hasn't been a moment, at least this season, and I don't think for the rest of this show, but it's been a while since I watched seasons 1 and 2, so I can't comment as accurately. But I mean, this season, like, I haven't been uninterested in the show at any point during an episode. Like, it never loses my engagement.
You mentioned the no dialogue, and one thing they do really well is every episode they have scenes where there's no dialogue, and maybe 5 episodes, but they score the show really well.
Absolutely.
And it's shot really well. So like, it may have good lighting, it may have just a cool background, but it's going to be intense enough to keep you engaged no matter what else is going on. Like, they do a great job with that. Their song selection for montages or for like scenes with no dialogue fit the scenes really well. That's a credit to the crew to know, like, just because like there's no dialogue doesn't mean something isn't happening at all times. So like,
right.
And they managed to really nail that part of the show.
Yeah. And you nailed it. I mean, the cinematography and the score is just, it's so, I feel like we keep going on about this every time the show comes up, but I mean, I feel like it deserves attention because it's something that I feel like is taken for granted in other, especially shows that, I mean, I would argue Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad are like largely like kind of dialogue character driven shows. And yet, but then you have these sequences with no dialogue. But I mean, like you say, there's so much happening because of just the technical proficiency of, I mean, really the entire crew. Cause I mean, like, somebody's writing that, directing it. And like, it's really well acted for having no dialogue. I mean, it's just from, you know, soup to nuts on that. It's just, it's all incredibly well done. And I don't think we can give that enough attention, to be honest with you.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yeah, I think we probably hammer on some top issue every time we watch the show, but like, something's good, something's good. And like, they've really found a formula as far as a crew to kind of really make these things work. And yeah, such a show that relies on the main characters are all pretty much lawyers and ex-cop, whatever. It's not a sign, ex-cop. They've really kind of nailed how to say things, kind of made the dialogue really count, you know, like say things right that matter. You don't use 10 words in 5 count.
And I mean, kind of on the flip side of, you know, not having dialogue is like, I feel like the relationship between Chuck and Jimmy, I mean, there's a lot happening beneath the surface, but I mean, there is a lot of stuff going on whenever they are talking with each other. Like you just increasingly see like how Chuck is pushing him. And I think I think you brought this up a week or so ago, how like Chuck is slowly pushing Jimmy to being Saul. And I feel like that's just, it's like more and more apparent how that's happening. Cause like, he's trying to do the right thing. And like, it's just like never enough for Chuck. So finally, I mean, you can kind of, I took a screenshot of like the moment where Kim tells Jimmy that Chuck was recording him, and they're sitting in Jimmy's office, and he's just like broken. And I feel like that's the moment where we're kind of getting onto the descent towards Saul Goodman at this point. And because I mean, he's kind of literally become the criminal lawyer that Jesse articulated.
There's good dynamics, man, as far as like doing the Jimmy, like I said, it's easy to read on the surface, but kind of, I mean, eventually find out, Chuck's real goal is to kind of in his own way, but he doesn't want him to be successful in his field.
Right.
Like, Chuck's domain is the law. No, this is my law.
Right.
The law is mine. So he wants to make sure Jimmy's successful, but he doesn't want him treading on his territory and kind of having to deal with him, because Jimmy's, he's a bit creative with things, so to say.
Well, and stuff. I would contend on that he didn't start out that way necessarily, but I feel like that was even like the beginning of how Chuck started pushing him towards being Saul Goodman. Is like, you know, he does everything right. Like he gets a law degree. And granted, like you say, it is creative. Like he goes to like an online thing, but he gets it done within the rules. But it's just like repeatedly, whenever he gets something done, Chuck's just like, nope, not good enough. And like ends up shutting him down in some capacity. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just like this like steady progression along that same path. And it's just like continues to ratchet up in scope and consequence.
It's always consequences to be dealing with the law.
Did you watch Judge Dredd today or something like that?
Like last week, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Not the slow one, the good one with Carl Urban, Lena Headey. But yeah, what are you talking about?
I guess to get us into more of this week's episode, speaking of transitioning into Saul Goodman, Jimmy, when he's talking to Kim, then he's making his apology to her after he doesn't call her and he doesn't want her to be his legal counsel. And he says, like, I'm going to take care of this myself, me, Jimmy McGill. And it's just like the kind of drawing the contrast of like, that like his character making that transformation. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I also, I didn't realize until I was rewatching today, in the opening like the intro for this week, it's the Los Pollos Hermanos truck driving the same route that Hector Salamanca's truck was driving later in the episode. So I was like, oh, okay. A little narrative connectivity there.
Yeah, and the show seems to, at least this season, have started most, I think every episode started with Mike and what Mike's doing. And that's been the jumping off point. And you get, I guess, as Mike's doing his stuff in the desert or stuff with Gus, you do get with a grimmer look of Mike's scenes. It's a darker tone, darker feel, but there's a lot more vibrant colors in Jimmy's world right now than there is in Mike's. And so, yeah, I think this one started off here. There's like a pair of shoes tied up on a top of like a power line, and they drive past it, and those boys, and this show also foreshadows as good as any other show does as well on TV. And so, I mean, that's the open, and you don't, there's a truck there, and there's two shoes hanging above the truck or whatever, and the truck drives on, and you see it's Los Boys or Mono's truck, but like, no, it's going to be relevant at some point. Maybe not this episode, but at least down the line. You're going to need to know what that's for, where it comes from. But.
Yeah, I mean, like, the shoes give away that, like, clearly it's been, like, a probably a couple months or a year or something like that. The shoes are all beat up. So, I mean, you get the idea that, like, Gus gets in there and he kind of bites and holds on that.
Yeah.
And during the episode, I was kind of wondering at the time whether or not Chuck was actually feeling conflicted when he was talking with the lawyer. Cause like you see him like close to getting pretty emotional when Jimmy's about to be arrested and taken to be booked. And so that kind of got me wondering, like, is this going to be a shift for him? But I mean, even when he's talking with the counsel that's going to be prosecuting Jimmy, and like I was kind of wondering if he was conflicted about where that was going, he's still like making his own plays, and it's still just pushing everything on that end in the direction he wants it to go. And so, I mean, it's going to be really fun to see when it eventually doesn't go where he's expecting it to. Because, like, he's not expecting Saul Goodman. So, you know, clearly somewhere down the line, it's going to not be according to Chuck's plan.
Well, I think Chuck has this – I think Chuck sees Jimmy's ambition, but sees it in a small scope, not in a big scale, which is what it ends up becoming. So I think – I don't think he underestimates him, but I think he doesn't – I think he kind of looks down on him a little bit, because he thinks he can be great and wants to be great somewhere else. But I don't think he underestimates how ruthless Jimmy wants things.
I think he feels threatened by Jimmy and doesn't quite understand how and why. And so it kind of comes off as a condescension and trying to just keep him belittled at all times.
Well, I think he's definitely threatened by him because he wants him out of his field.
I mean, I think even past that, like, I think there's something about Jimmy that like personally threatens Chuck. And I mean, you could look at it from a way of like, Chuck's like, he's like lawful evil and Jimmy's kind of like chaotic neutral. So, I mean, they're kind of in opposition in that way, but, I don't know. You just kind of get the sense that like Chuck doesn't quite get how deep this conflict is even for himself.
Oh no. It's interesting to watch Chuck's internal struggle as far as like what he wants from this relationship with his brother. And kind of, he wants his relationship with Jimmy, but all in his own terms. No kind of give and take at all.
Right.
It's kind of, it's not his accord or like nothing at all.
And that's another, I had forgotten about this until you just said that. But when Jimmy breaks into Chuck's house and he's just going off on him when he's like, after he'd found out about the tape and everything, he says something like, "That must be why Rebecca left you." And I'd forgotten about that scene where Jimmy had dinner with Chuck, and I think it was Chuck's wife at the time. I think that was last season. And you kind of wonder what happened. I mean, with seeing Chuck, you can kind of expect what happened between him and a woman, but then just getting kind of that sense, and it's like, oh yeah, like maybe he's this way with everyone, and it's not isolated to Jimmy, but maybe he's just like, he's playing this at all times with anyone he's close to.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm interested because I don't think he's done with him yet. Even though I think he portrayed as being done with him when he found out he's recording him and that conversation outside the house before the cops come. But I don't think he's. I think there's another shoe to drop in their relationship to kind of really separate them.
I mean, I think on a certain level, Jimmy's kind of out for blood at this point, and he's. If he's still concerned with what Chuck thinks of him, it's in like a purely spiteful way and not even like a, I want to make you proud way. I think that's kind of out the window, but I think you're right. I don't think he's completely written him off yet because I mean, Jimmy does have that loyalty. Like he develops that with somebody and it doesn't really go away. I mean, that's part of why he's such an endearing guy and a character that you want to root for.
100%. Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, they also walk a thin line with the show, too, as far as, like, Dogman on the extent is not a good person because he's a criminal lawyer and a corrupt lawyer, but you had to have this show and make Jim McGill a sympathetic character and to see why he becomes Saul Goodman. So you have to find that gray area where he's still breaking the law and kind of not so much he's treading that line, what's appropriate, not inappropriate, but you also in Chuck's the character where, like, I don't think Chuck's like an evil antagonist, but he's also a guy where, like, you can watch his next Jimmy and understand why Jimmy does some of the things he does.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think even once he's fully transitioned into being Saul Goodman, I wouldn't ever say, like, I think he's always like an interesting character and a sympathetic character in a lot of ways. You feel like he's more, at least more or less, on a moral side of things. And I mean, I contrast this to like Walt, but I mean, part of the reason I think at this point I like Better Call Saul more than I like Breaking Bad is you've got Jimmy, Kim, and Mike, all of whom you can like fully root for and like, and you're not conflicted about that. Whereas in Breaking Bad, you've got like Jesse that you can really root for. And even then, like, that kind of develops. Like, you...
Wait, were you root for Jesse? Or weren't you root for, like, you know, the cops to bust this guy? Weren't you root for Hank? What about Hank? I mean, I think Jesse's more sympathetic than Walt is, but Jesse's still, like, a bad dude, too. It's like he's unaccountable for some of the shit they did.
I mean, sure. Like, and from a... I guess, like, if you're going to look at it from, like, a strictly legal standpoint, then, yeah, you'd only be rooting for Hank. But, I mean, from, like, a moral standpoint, and I mean, you're not talking about real people, you're talking about characters. So I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say like I can fully, especially once you get into like season two and moving
don't
forward.
Don't miss your words, friend. I know some real people that I would consider characters as well. So.
Well, yeah, fair enough. And I'm granted, I need to rewatch Breaking Bad before I can fully make this judgment. But I just feel like I can root for the characters more in Better Call Saul. Like I feel more of an emotional connection to good things happening for these characters, which also makes me feel like they're all going to get screwed before everything or before Better Call Saul is done. But I think that's just like my Song of Ice and Fire trauma.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So I'll jump on that. I guess to wrap it up here, we see towards the end of the episode, Mike plants the drugs on the back of Hector Salamanca's truck that's heading across the border. Those guys get hemmed up. Oh, go ahead.
Let's go back a little bit.
Sure.
And kind of touch on how Mike got into that job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mike's been doing his investigation on stuff like that. He finally comes face to face with Gus and they have the conversation about like not telling him whatever and him not investigating Gus any further, but it's all conditioned on kind of taking out Hector Salamanca. And so like Mike said, we're going to quit that. So they come to an arrangement where he's got to go and he meets a doctor and the doctor sets him up with a valid prescription that I don't think so. And then he's out the desert and they find the competition and then he has an elaborate scheme to set these guys up. It probably did not seem the most efficient way to set them up, honestly.
Yeah. And rewatching it, I especially felt like there's probably a more, you know, solid way to make the same thing happen without being like a quarter mile away, just hoping that the wind cooperates. So this one shot you get at a tennis shoe filled with drugs works out.
First of all, like congratulations, you need Chuck the shit out of that Chuck Taylor sitting up on a high rise. It's this guy, yeah, he's gonna be a great chef. First of all, his age too, fantastic. But yeah, that part was like, I was like, all right, I get Mike's like this podcast to watch the TV pod, and they were talking about the Mike problem in this show is like it's kind of like they had Omar for The Wire, where it's like this larger than life character. He's into all these criminal activities, but all situations Mike is into, there's on this show, there's not really like that die a consequence for Mike.
Sure.
There could be a bad situation could devolve. It could do this and that. There's a lot of possibilities that can happen. But Mike's not going to die in this show.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's why, and thing is, and I'm cool with that. That's fine. But I want to keep Mike's, he's probably a little more grounded than him shooting Chuck Taylors from half a mile away.
I mean, I buy that because I wouldn't say it was a half mile. I'd say about a quarter mile. And I think a reasonable marksman could make that shot given that there isn't like a strong wind.
And he's like 65 years old.
Nah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I think it was alluded to that he was in Vietnam, which I think is just kind of their retcon of him being like a ex special forces guy turned cop turned organized crime fixer. So I feel like that's how it fits in. And I mean, in that scope, no pun intended, I feel like that's where the like marksmanship is explained.
Hey, listen, no offense, but like when you say no pun intended, I'm actually tuning out the next part because I know it's going to be a pun. So I don't like puns. So
no, if I say no pun intended, I've already said the pun.
Shit. All right. Congratulations on sticking a pun past me. You're just sharper than that.
Yeah, well.
Also, the problem is it's a good problem to have, though, because it's such a good character. And, I mean, Jonathan Banks does such a good job playing Mike. So, like, it's a small critique of, like, Mike being superhero,
sure.
Mike. But at the same time, like, if it means I have more Jonathan Banks on my TV playing Mike Imhotep,
no complaint. Yeah,
I'll tell you it every time.
I'm all in there. I'm all in there with you. So, but, I mean, that kind of brings us back to the drugs getting on the truck. And the guys driving the truck get hemmed up at the border. And so, like, what do you think the consequence is there? Because, I mean, clearly Hector's still active, you know, in Better Call Saul. Like, his empire is still functioning with Tuco. Is that kind of the catalyst for why Tuco's several rungs down from where Gus is? Like, is this kind of the precipitating event, do you think?
It can be. The trick you have to do as far as like the drug stuff is disassociating it from what you know from Breaking Bad and looking at it and just in a prism, so to speak. And so, the right effect, obviously, on the Tuco and Hector Salamanca, who I'm sure will pop up very soon. And so, I wonder how big a route that was, how big important those two guys were. Mm. So, I think there's still something to uncover to see how much damage that this hit on these two guys did.
Right. And I've got the sneaking suspicion that Mike is going to be the reason Hector winds up in a wheelchair, unable to speak.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not really like grasping too hard to, to get to that conclusion, but I feel like that's a distinct possibility at this point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a fair assessment to make.
Well, do you have any other parting thoughts on Better Call Saul at this time?
Yeah, watch the show. The show's good.
Mondays at 10 Eastern.
Show makes me happy.
Makes me happy.
It's progressing well. It's a great slow build. The show does a lot of things really well. Again, I don't know who does the score. Shout out to whoever that guy or girl is. They do a great job. Yeah, just watch good TV.
Sure. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at What Else Sucks. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/WES podcast. You can find show notes on our Wix website, which you can probably just find easiest through Facebook. And let us know if you have any thoughts on the show. Let us know if you have any thoughts on this podcast. We're always happy to talk with you. If you got some things you'd like us to talk about, let us know that as well. Or if you want to come on the show, we can probably work that out. So
we probably can. We're pretty open.
Yeah. With that in mind, we'll be here next week.
Ow.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the What Else Sucks podcast. Today's music is Where You've Been by the famous Slip Slams. There's a demo on SoundCloud that you can get. The link is going to be in the show notes. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at What Else Sucks. The Slip Slams are at Slip Slams, and they're both on Facebook. You can search up What Else Sucks on Facebook or facebook.com/WES podcast. Search up Slip Slams on Facebook. We're there as well. Reach out to us on Twitter or Facebook. Let us know if you're watching the show, what you think of the podcast, and please shoot us a review on iTunes if you are so inclined. We would love to hear your feedback, and we will see you back here next week.